You are listening to Frost Call. This episode was recorded Sunday, October the 17th, 2010. In today's episode, I will be interviewing Leo Behe, who is the son of Michael Behe. Michael Behe, of course, being a leader of the intelligent design community and the person who coined the phrase irreducible complexity. Leo has agreed to join us today to talk about his conversion to atheism and how it's affected his life. Leo, thanks for joining us.
No problem.
Go on a little bit about who you are and who your dad is.
All right. Well, I am 19 right now. I mean, I was homeschooled for all of my life, and my dad is a professor of biochemistry at Lehigh University, and many call him the father of intelligent design. And you know, I was raised. You know, with just this one viewpoint, I was raised with not really any other options. I mean, I just never really saw any need to do any exploring or ask questions. And so, you know, that's how it was for about 17 years of my life. So that's
Leo, when was the first time you actually realized that there was an alternate viewpoint in the world other than what you had grown up with?
Well, that's something that I started seeing, you know, alternate different opinions, conflicting opinions when I was younger. I would say, 13 or 14 is when I really started trying to look at things from other people's points of view, but I never really applied that to something as big as my religion until I was 17.
Was there a specific incident or a specific time at about that age that led you that way? Or?
Yeah, it was... It was specifically when I decided I wanted to really explore this issue. It was at the time I did not have any intention of changing my viewpoint. I didn't think that I would be convinced otherwise, but I wanted to look at it from, you know, an atheist point of view, just so I could understand where they were coming from, and I would be able to refute their arguments better. So, the first time I decided to really think about it, I borrowed a book from the library, The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins, and I read that in 2 days. I just sat
Wow.
down and read that. Yeah. And, I really tried to, open my mind up a little bit, try and feel where he was coming from. And, it was a big surprise, you know, seeing it from such a radically different perspective. And, it was a real blow, you know, to the confidence I had in my religion, because it sort of knocked out, you know, the foundation I had, you know, the just kind of this assumption I had the whole time that I was correct. I realized that it was much more complicated than I thought it was.
What specifically, if you can think of anything off the top of your head anyway, what specifically in the book did you find eye-opening?
Probably the thing that most shook me in the book was just the credibility of the Bible that Richard Dawkins addressed. That was something that I had never really thought about. I had been pretty good up until then debating, you know, people on the existence of God, but the leap from that, from the existence of God to a personal God, a loving God, such as the one described in the Bible, is something that I had always kind of taken for granted. And I read that, and I said, well, wow, I thought to myself, what evidence do I really have that the Bible is, you know, the Bible is anything close to credible? Why should I take that seriously and reject the Quran, for example?
Yeah.
I mean,
have you ever read anything by Bart Ehrman or any other authors that go into problems with the Bible or issues about who wrote the Bible and why they wrote it and what their specific motivations were?
In terms of credibility of the Bible, probably the only other author I've read who really addressed that was Christopher Hitchens. The credibility of the Bible is something that's something I would like to read more about. But I would say Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins, also Sam Harris, I've read that they were the ones I've read so far that addressed the credibility of the Bible.
You mentioned that you started off at about 13 or so, and then later when you actually turned at about 17, you were really just looking at trying to understand the other person's viewpoint, which I find really interesting. I was kind of the same way myself. I always thought that was the best way to learn about your enemy or to even just be a better person yourself, just to know what the other person thinks. And it's interesting how that led you to read the other person's information and see where they're coming from and see what it is they believe and how that led you down this path. I think that's pretty common among a lot of Christians who turn to atheism.
Yeah. I think that's something that I really like to see, you know, when a person, in a Christian, even if they don't end up becoming an atheist, I really like to see somebody at least taking the time and making the effort to consider the possibility that they may be wrong. And that's actually, that ties into one of the biggest points I'm trying to get out there is don't try to just block out the points, you know, especially to your children. You know, if you're raising kids, don't try and protect them, you know, from other points of view, because really the way that they will become strongest in knowledge, you know, closest to the truth, is by exploring every possible idea, is by looking at things from every angle. And I think that is definitely one of the most effective ways to get a Christian to realize how, in what way his religion or his reasoning may be flawed. A lot of them just have not taken the time to ever, you know, look at something from a different angle.
Yeah, even if it doesn't turn them, at least they might better understand somebody else. I know for me, one of my main issues when I became an atheist was homosexuality. And I was actually doing a research project on it at the time with the job I worked for, and I went to a gay church, which really threw me for a loop. And so I started researching, you know, how are they interpreting the Bible, and what is it that they're going into? Why do they believe what they do? And that got me back into the inerrancy of the Bible and other problems. But that was really a big point of me. You mentioned briefly about teaching the children there. How exactly were you taught at home, like, to believe and things to about the Bible and about outside life? You said you were homeschooled the whole time.
Well, yeah, you know, I was homeschooled all through high school, and so, you know, I wouldn't say that, you know, my parents were overly aggressive in their teaching. You know, I'm not trying to say they're bad people or anything, but it was more like I never really learned about any other viewpoints simply because I never questioned, because it was never something that was brought up. It was just always kind of an unwritten, you know, assumption. It was kind of a subconscious assumption that we all made. Well, you know, we already know that, you know, this is right, so there's no need to really ask questions about it. So, and being homeschooled, of course, I wasn't really, you know, I never got the opportunity to hear about things from somebody else's point of view.
And a lot of people assume that homeschooling is always bad, but it seems like in your case, your parents were at least rather educated. They may have not shown you a lot of different viewpoints, but they were at least educated individuals. So I'm assuming they did a pretty decent job teaching you, at least generally. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't be here in the first place doing this.
Yes, yes. There are pros and cons to homeschooling, and I definitely wouldn't say, you know, it's bad all the time. I do think that, you know, having a close relationship with your child is very important, and homeschooling can sometimes help foster, you know, that relationship. And I think if one is homeschooled, then if they are still given the right amount of exposure, you know, to other people, other viewpoints, then it can most definitely work out. You know, it's definitely not all bad.
I think the hard part about homeschooling is that most people, going back to the Kruger-Dunning effect, which I talked about a couple episodes ago, where people who aren't as intelligent tend to think they're more intelligent. Whenever you don't have the right amount of education or intelligence to really teach your children well, you might think you're doing a great job when you're really not. And of course, what you hearken back to there, where you're talking about how you didn't really get alternate viewpoints. How do you feel about the indoctrination aspect of homeschooling? Did you feel like you were indoctrinated?
I feel like it was to a certain degree. I mean, I don't feel like my parents were necessarily trying to stifle any other viewpoints, but I feel like I never really got the chance to see things from, you know, another point of view. I feel like that was not, you know, my education and religion, you know, in moral belief. I don't believe that was that worked out very well. I mean, of course, I believe I'm at this point, I'm thinking fairly clearly about it, but I think that for a long time during my childhood, and, you know, you could call it simply you know, indoctrination by because out of failure to ask questions, because I kind of didn't, I never really saw the need to ask questions because I was never really exposed to different viewpoints. So yeah, you know, it was kind of a joint effort.
Do you think it was kind of an intentional thing, or do you think possibly that they just thought, your parents just felt like, hey, this is the truth and this is what we need to teach our children because it's the truth?
Yeah, you know, it was definitely not malicious in any way, but yeah, they were of course doing what they thought was best, and I think the only problem with that in general is that all parents who are doing, you know, what they believe is best for their child, they always, just as anybody else in with any other point of view, they always need to consider the possibility that they're wrong, and they always need to consider that there may be a better way to do it. They should always be asking questions. They should be examining their own methods, and they should always let their children be making decisions in that. They should always be open to a child's viewpoint. They should never stifle questions that a child may ask, or that will stifle a child's development very much.
When you were growing up and going through homeschooling and just in your daily lives and church lives, how did you deal with issues in the Bible? I've seen some of your writing where you mentioned, how did you know if you took something in the Bible literally or metaphorically? For example, Genesis, you know, do you take that literally or do you take it metaphorically? How did your family deal with that, those issues?
How did I know which parts to interpret metaphorically or literally?
Bingo.
Yeah. That never really bothered me. Back when I was, you know, Catholic for the first 17 years or so, that was something I assumed that it was within the authority of the Pope to tell us which verses were interpreted literally or metaphorically. But after I lost my faith, then I realized there's kind of a flaw in that, because the reason, the foundation on which we assume that the Pope can interpret verses correctly is itself an interpretation of the Bible. It is, you know, when Jesus says, you know, I will give you the keys of the kingdom, you know, you are a rock, and upon this rock I will build my church. The infallibility of the Pope is itself an interpretation of the Bible. And so one needs to admit that they are interpreting the Bible in a particular way, in their own personal manner, before they can get to the conclusion that the Pope is interpreting it infallibly. So I think that the whole thing, no matter which way you look at it, is kind of guesswork in the first place. That's one of my big problems with, you know, how people interpret the Bible now.
You know, I never even thought about it from the Pope point of view. I grew up a Pentecostal, so evangelical, and we just assumed everything the Catholics did were evil. So I really didn't know. It makes sense, though. You know, at least you have someone to fall back on, that it's the Pope telling you this is the way to interpret it. For us, it was, you basically just depended on what you believed. You know, it was your interpretation of the Bible, or your pastor's interpretation, but your pastor's interpretation wasn't necessarily right. It was, you had to kind of divine it for yourself.
Yeah, you know, the whole concept of personal interpretation, that would, you know, maybe it sounded good at first when people had not, you know, when the concept hadn't been around before. But once it started, you know, nowadays we have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of different, you know, different Protestant churches. You know, we have countless interpretations of the Bible, and obviously, you know, there is only one way, there is only one interpretation of the Bible that can be correct, because many of the interpretations contradict each other. So,
yeah, that always got me as a kid too. I think some of the way that some of the people would answer it was, the most important thing is the big stuff, the whole John 3:16, and you know, they throw out some of the other parts. As long as you know that Jesus was your savior, the rest of it's okay.
Yeah,
unless you're a Mormon.
Yeah, yeah, which would of course lead me to ask what, you know, what the point of the rest of the Bible is. You know, why exactly did he write all of this if the only thing essential to salvation was to know that Jesus was God? You know, I'm sure in a Christian view they wrote all of this for a point. I mean, many of the teachings that Jesus gave, he said the consequences for not accepting those teachings were, you know, eternal damnation. So I would say that, you know, they say the only thing that is really necessary is Jesus, but to me that seems like they are compromising. It seems like they're kind of falling back on the one thing that they all still agree upon, because the rest of it has lost its meaning to countless interpretations.
Yeah, it's actually going back to the guy I mentioned earlier, and I'll link it in the show notes, but Bart Ehrman, who I think he puts himself out as an agnostic. He teaches at a Bible seminary in Florida. He has a couple books. One's Misquoting Jesus and Jesus Interrupted. But he goes into who wrote the Bible, the New Testament, and why they wrote it. And he goes into how we know and the different research that goes into it. And it's actually pretty good even for a Christian or an atheist or someone who's never been an atheist or a new atheist. It's really good information because it shows you the political reasons things were written, like what these authors actually were trying to convey and why different verses don't match up. Like, why does Mark describe things one way? Why does Luke describe things another way? And it's all about, you know, one version, Jesus is, he's the perfect spotless lamb, and he's shown as this perfect innocent person the whole time. And he's saying, my God, why have you forsaken me? It's all about him being innocent. And in another version, another book, in the Bible, in the New Testament, he's a victorious savior, where he's saying, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." He's in command, he's in control, and it's about a and that's the one where he's throwing the moneylenders out. It's all about a message they're trying to convey, and it's really interesting when you look at it from that point of view. You're really seeing the propaganda they're trying to get across, for good or bad. But that's the point behind it, and so when a Christian or a Catholic or whoever tries to say, no, it all meshes together, you know, it's kind of hard to say that because you're taking it out of context, and here's why.
Yeah, that sounds very interesting, because most or all Catholics and Christians I know, you know, they never think about, they don't really ever address, you know, who wrote the Bible or what their intentions are. They just say, you know, that, well, they said they were inspired by God, and I believe they were inspired by God, so that's that. But, you know, I think if, yeah, so something like that, I'd definitely be interested in reading, because I think we could know a lot more about the Bible and about what they really meant if we knew something about the authors and their intentions.
I think when most Christians are, and I use that term just broadly, realize, and I never learned it when I was in church, But when they realized that none of the New Testament was written, no one who wrote the New Testament ever saw Jesus and anything more than what they claimed as a vision. So none of the writers were contemporaries of Jesus. And I never knew that when I was a Christian. They just never bring it up.
Yeah.
Even Paul was 20 or 30 years after the supposed death of Jesus. He never saw him. And it's really shocking to a lot of Christians when they first find that out. Did the Catholic Church ever really go into who wrote the Bible or how it came to be, how it was put together as a book?
Yeah, not really. With my faith, it's simply we kind of started. The starting point was the assumption that the Bible was true, and so that's kind of how my faith worked for the first 17 years or so, and that with that in place, it made perfect sense. But of course, that's something that as soon as I realized, I thought about, well, what if this isn't true? And once I addressed that particular point, everything suddenly became much less sure. It all became very uncertain.
Well, it's always easier to start with a conclusion and then find your evidence and facts to support that.
Exactly. Yeah. If you have a conclusion, if you have a message that you want to back up, it's very easy to get it from something as ambiguous as the Bible. That's one of the things that I notice a lot when I'm debating Christians, is that they will give me explanations, for any given issue, the power of prayer or why there's evil in the world or something. They will give me explanations which are technically possible but are not actually backed up by scripture or have any evidence, because once they've already got their conclusions, it's very easy to take something as ambiguous as the Bible, take something like God's omnipotence, his omniscience, and really from there you can make up whatever you want. You can say, well, God has evil in the world because, he's testing us, because he wants us to choose, which may not be credible, but it's technically possible. And unfortunately, that's enough for them. They say, well, he can do anything, so he could have just done that. So I'll just be convinced, with that.
Yeah, Ben actually talked about that a couple episodes ago, about how God can't be omnipotent, or he can't be all-powerful, all-knowing, and all-loving. You can take away any one of those three, and you can explain a God. You could have a trickster God who likes to mess with people, and then he could be all-loving, he couldn't be all-loving. If he could be a trickster, and then he could be all-powerful and all-knowing, he just likes to mess with people, and that could explain it. Or he could be not all-loving. You could take away any one of those three, but most Christians that I know when I was a Christian, I believed that God was all-loving, all-powerful, and all-knowing, which, of course, like you said, gives you the problem of evil.
Mm-hmm.
You said...
Yeah.
I saw you, some of your writing where you're saying that your mom perceives you as a threat to your other siblings. How do you feel about being seen as a threat in your own family?
Yeah. Well, it's when I say, I'm perceived as a threat, of course, then it's about, not necessarily a, threat to their physical well-being or anything, but, they see it, very simply as I'm wrong and they are right, and, they want they want what's best for their kids, so they don't, they would rather not, my little brothers, you know, change their minds and go with my viewpoint. But you know, how I feel about that is, you know, it's not very pleasant, you know, being the only one around who does have this viewpoint, you know. I feel rather isolated, you know. But I'm a big, you know, I always remind myself that it doesn't matter how many people, you know, believe one thing or how many people believe another. There is right and there's wrong. There's truth, you know, and then there's falsehood. So it's, you know, it's something I need to deal with, you know. I mean, in my lifetime, I'll probably, you know, we will probably be outnumbered by, you know, Christians, because right now it's, what, only 12%, I believe, of the United States has no religious affiliation. So, yeah, you know, but the upside is, you know, I do respect them, you know. I don't have much respect for the doctrine of Christianity in general. I think it's false, and I think it's, you know, pretty badly patched together in terms of the Bible. But, you know, I respect them and, you know, their desire to do what's best for their kids. But I also say I am not trying to necessarily make anybody else, you know, believe what I believe. You know, that's, I would like them to, but I have no problem with somebody who arrives at the conclusion of, you know, maybe being a deist, you know, or an agnostic, you know, because what I think is most important is that people keep an open mind. They look at all, you know, the points of view, and if they do that, then they are, you know, they're still free to make their personal decisions. So, you know, I'm not going to tell anybody they need to believe, you know, what I believe, but you know, as long as they look at something seriously, as long as they're not just believing something out of ignorance, then that's the most important thing, I think, making an informed decision.
Do you think, from your parents' point of view or from your church members' point of view you went to, do you think they believe that you're just mad at God and that you're like a lost lamb or something like that?
Yeah, actually, very often, and I've heard it from some other people before, very often people assume that if you turn away from Christianity, then it's because you're angry, you know, at God, you know, which to me doesn't exactly make sense, you know, because one cannot really be angry at God if he truly does not believe in him. So I always thought that somebody telling me that I'm making my decisions based on, you know, an emotion like anger, I always thought that was kind of a trivial way of dealing with my opinion. It was actually kind of lowering, you know, my opinion, my point of view to something fleeting and something irrational, like, you know, being angry. And, you know, I for a while, you know, I don't like Catholicism or Christianity, but I definitely would not say that that is why I don't believe it. You know, I don't believe it because I don't like it because I don't believe it. It's not that I don't believe it because I don't like it.
When I first became an atheist, a lot of people told me that I was mad at God. My wife, who does the show with me when she's not working, she was still a Christian for almost 2 years after I became an atheist. And everyone told her that I was just mad at God, and that's what she would tell me. And luckily, she finally saw the light. But getting that point across that you can't be mad at something you don't believe in can be really difficult. The example I tried to use that would really upset a lot of people was, as an adult, which the person I'm talking to or yourself clearly are, would you say that you're still mad at Santa Claus for not giving you a pony on your 5th birthday? And of course, they're going to say that's absurd because you now know there is no Santa Claus. So how can you be mad? Which, if you're 5, of course you'd be mad at Santa Claus because you believe. But at this age, you don't believe in Santa Claus, so you can't be mad at him. That tends to really upset them because, you know, when you compare a God to Santa Claus, it tends to do that. But it's that's kind of the way I feel about it, that you like you said, you can't be angry at something that you don't believe in. It's just, you can't.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely.
Do you believe that your parents are going to be successful in keeping your family away from your beliefs? Because now you're kind of that outsider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On my post on Reddit, I've received a lot of comments about this. A lot of people say that because I've become kind of the outsider, then my siblings might see me, you know, as sort of a martyr and be more compelled to, you know, to explore my viewpoints. And, you know, I think that, I don't think that my siblings will always be, you know, will always just go along with things like I did. I think once somebody gets to the point where they say, well, there are other viewpoints and they are credible enough that they are worth looking into, which is, I think, you know, my siblings have gotten to that point. Once you do that, it's only a matter of time. I mean, you know, and as I said before, I don't necessarily think all of my siblings are going to go and, you know, going to lose all of their faith. But once they are old enough, they're free to go out and explore whatever they want, I think that they're going to look at other faiths, you know, other points of view, and including no faith at all. They're going to ask questions about their own faith, and even if they ended up staying Catholic, then they would still have learned about the other viewpoints, and they would be much more knowledgeable in their own faith, in other faiths, and it would still be, you know, a great experience for them. It would be very healthy for their intellect, for their mind.
I hope your parents get to that point of view too, where they can at least accept you for who you are and not try to treat you like the black sheep.
Yeah, you know, I think it's really just of course there's no as we said there's no lack of, you know, of love on either side. You know, I respect them as people, I respect them as my parents and all, but yeah, you know, it's just really hard when my point of view and their point of view are so they contrast each other so strongly. It's really hard, you know, to reconcile that. And I think that once I'm out on my own, you know, once I have an apartment and all, I think it'll be much easier to get along, because I think a lot of the tension will go away then.
I got to say, I really admire you coming out when you did. I didn't even really think about becoming an atheist until I was about 26 to 27. And
thank you.
When I became an atheist, when I actually told my wife was 7-7 of 07, when I actually just dawned on me that I didn't believe in a God. And my dad, he grew up a very strong Christian, and he grew us up, you know, brought us up in the church too. He died about 2 months later, and I never told him. I actually, to be honest, it was almost liberating in a way, because I was scared to death of telling my dad that I was an atheist. I was sure he was going to cut me off. So to see that you've already taken this step so early in your life, so that you can go through this hard time and eventually get back to just caring about your loved ones, that's really admirable. I really think that's amazing.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I think that, you know, it did take me a long time to get to that point as well. Maybe not quite as long, but you know, at least I was an atheist for at least a year before I told anybody. And you know, I think it's very sad that, you know, it's like that, and it kind of speaks a little bit about the sort of monopoly that religion, even just a particular religion, the Christian religion, still has on, you know, this country and many other countries in the world, that, you know, nobody's going to, you know, be scared to come out and say, well, you know, I believe that, you know, I believe I want to be, you know, a musician. You know, I believe, you know, I decided I want to be a political independent. You know, other points of view on other matters are not taboo, like point of view contrary to religion, and it's just so widely accepted in society that it's become, you know, it's become the norm, and people will very often see you as abnormal for not believing it. And you know, it's something that people believe, many people believe very, very strongly, and often saying you don't believe in that, you know, it can alienate you in a way that nothing else can, you know.
Yeah, it's not like you're telling your parents you decided that you prefer Church's chicken over Popeyes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You changed the family's lifelong obsession with one type of food or something, or you're a Ford person instead of a Chevy. It should, hopefully, like you're saying, I hope one day it can come to that where it's people don't take religion that seriously, but that's coming from our point of view.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's, you know, even if somebody takes religion seriously, then I hope that one day people will be content, at least, with believing in their religion strongly, but not projecting that onto others as, you know, a sort of expectation, like, you know, if somebody's very Christian and someone else says, oh, you know, I'm not Christian, they can just say, oh, okay, well, you know, that's your point of view. That's cool. I'm Christian, you're not, you know. I'm all right with that, you know, as they would do with any other opinion that someone gave. And, you know, that would be a big step forward, because right now, you know, I mean, people have been comfortable with religion. You know, religion has permeated society for so long that it's come to define so much about people, and they're shocked when somebody, especially somebody close to them, says that they don't believe in God or the same God that they do.
It's like they take offense to it. It's like a very personal attack almost.
Yeah, because people, they come to associate their religion so much with themselves that rejecting that religion, they almost take a rejection of that religion as a rejection of themselves, as a rejection of their beliefs, and they take it as a personal attack. And funny thing is, I really don't think that it's much of a choice for one to not believe in God. You know, you don't just wake up one morning and say, I think I'll stop believing in God. You stop believing in God when you see the evidence against the credibility of scriptures, when you see the lack of evidence for, you know, the power of prayer and the miracles that Christians talk about. You know, it's something that you do subconsciously once you are given the evidence, or lack thereof. You know, a lot of people have asked me about, you know, turning away from religion and being an atheist. They talk about it kind of like it was a choice. Like, but why would you want to stop believing in God? You know, they ask me things like that, like it was, you know, a completely conscientious decision. And I always say, you know, it's not something that I just kind of decided to do. I just said, you know, the decision I made was that I wanted to know the truth. I wanted to get as close to it as possible, and I want to look at everything from different points of view to get all the evidence. The conclusion that God did not exist was something that simply came naturally to me after I had looked at things from different points of view.
Yeah, I thought of it for myself much like that. It was kind of like being in The Wizard of Oz, and you want to see the wizard, so you pull back the curtain, only you find there's nothing there. But your intentions, you know, for me, my intentions were purely true. I really wanted to know God. But when I went looking for him, I found there wasn't one.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people, that's the problem, you know, a lot of people start at the conclusion, you know, that there is a God, you know, and they will, as long as they believe there is a God, they'll see him, you know, they'll see him in everyday life, because that's just the way the mind works. They'll pick out, you know, the extraordinary. You know, they can pray for 100 people, you know, who are dying of cancer, and they can all die and it won't faze them. But if they pray for one more and he lives, they'll be convinced, you know, of the power of prayer. Because, yeah, they pick out the extraordinary without taking the ordinary into account. So, yeah, you know, if somebody starts there, they'll see him. But if somebody starts from a completely, you know, indifferent standpoint, says, okay, well, you know, I want to go find God. I need God to show himself to me. I don't want to, you know, a lot of people project their beliefs onto what they see. They see something and say, oh, well, God did that. If somebody says, you know, as you did and as I did, if they say, you know, I want to go find God, I want to go see, and I want to go find evidence of him, then oftentimes they're surprised, because they look and there's nothing there.
Well, Leo, where do you see yourself going from here?
Well, you know, I've debated with very many, you know, Christians and Catholics, and all of them have given me what I consider to be very good advice, which is simply to it's to keep asking questions and to keep searching. You know, I think one of the foundations of the way I think and the thing that got me to the belief I'm at today is always consider the possibility that you may be wrong. You know, that doesn't mean I think I am wrong. I do think there is no God. I don't think there is any evidence for God. But, you know, I always need to approach everything with an open mind. I always need to say, maybe I'm wrong, you know, about this or that. So, yeah, in terms of my belief, you know, I see myself always asking more questions, but of course I think it most likely that I will continue to believe that there is no God. And if that is the case, which it most likely will be, I would like to try and get my message out, you know. The message of no God, that's not really something new. That's been pioneered most recently by, you know, the new atheists. But, you know, speaking as somebody who came up and was brought up, you know, in a very Catholic home and who was not, and who always, they always kind of took it for granted, you know. They were happy with, unfounded explanations, you know, just kind of excuses, you know, arguments from ignorance, you know, we don't know, so God must have done it. Coming from that kind of background, you know, I think I really do understand a lot of the time where Christians are coming from, and I do know that they think they have the truth, and that they're, you know, and if they're really searching for the truth, you know, I'm completely sympathetic, you know, and I would like to help them. So, yeah, I see myself doing my best to try and, you know, get my message out there, to keep on debating, keep on asking questions, you know, hopefully do put something in writing eventually. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Well, I want to wish you a happy 20th birthday coming up. You turned 20 a day before I turned 30. I feel like I'm getting old now.
Oh, no.
Well, Leo, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate you being on.
Yeah, I really appreciate you having me.
Well, that's all for the show. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the interview. Please be sure to leave feedback. You can email me at tom@frostcall.com. It only takes a minute. Until next time, that's all for Frost Call.